D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you on your drive home. We hope you are having a wonderful Tuesday. And you had an excellent day at work. We're having an excellent day at work. We've covered a lot of things. Peanut butter and jelly, the Titans. We had Trevor on the show. We've got so much to discuss. We'll keep you abreast of any other NHL or NBA trades that may go down during this hour. The NBA draft is upon us tonight. We'll see what happens there. But we're going to start the hour by discussing something heard on our program last week. So last week we had Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic on our show because he wrote a film study of Cam Ward. And Baumgartner is optimistic that Cam Ward can make a leap in year two. So we had him on the show to break down his film study. And at one point during our conversation, I asked Baumgartner, when you watched Cam Ward's rookie tape, did it remind you of any other recent first-year quarterbacks? Here is what Nick Baumgartner said.
To me, it reminded me of what I thought we would see from Bryce Young as a rookie, and we didn't. Bryce Young fell apart, right? So he started out with this horrible, you know, like nothing around him. It was a worse situation than what the Titans had, but it wasn't good. And he fell apart. He fell off the rails. I thought Cam Ward, I thought it was going to be the same type of thing for him, but it was what, so he doesn't remind me of necessarily anybody in recent years, but it's what I thought we would have seen from Bryce Young, because Cam, to me, and now we're seeing Bryce Young settle down and playing much better as a you know, older player, but Cam Ward, to me, is a more athletic and physically powerful version of Bryce Young. They played a lot. They're very similar. Like you said, they can hunt throws. That can still work in the NFL if you're going faster and playing on time and in rhythm. And so he reminds me of Bryce Young, and I think that the track is going to be, you can't get down if it's not looking perfect at the beginning. You just got to let him work through it and let him keep going. And over time, I think it's going to even itself out. So I think those two guys are a little similar in my book.
Quickly, before we get back to Bryce Young and Cam Ward, one texter says, abreast with a space between A and B. Abreast with no space. Abreast is one word. It means to keep you informed of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On top of things.
Right. Yes. Keep abreast. We will keep you informed on things that happen. Again, our job on this show is to educate you in more ways than one. So go home and say, honey, DVD kept me abreast of the
Ghana England
of yes. The news of the day in sports.
The dreaded nil-nil tie.
And
the
your
draw.
And your wife might say, how dare you? Who's breast? A breast. All right. Let's get back to business here. So Bryce Young. And when I heard that, part of me shuddered a little bit because of how Bryce Young's NFL career has started. Of course, like Cam Ward, Bryce Young was the first overall pick in the 2023 NFL draft. And to say that Bryce Young's early NFL career has been a roller coaster would be an understatement. He was benched at one point, if memory serves. He did
in year two.
He did lead the Panthers to a wild card appearance in the postseason this past season, and the Panthers hung around with the Los Angeles Rams. They lost 34-31, a game that was played in Charlotte, by the way. So let's unpack.
They were an 8-9 division winner.
Yes.
And got to host a
yes.
really good Rams team.
Yes.
That might have been good enough to win the whole thing in the first round.
As someone who cheers for a team in the NFC South, I can tell you it was not murderer's row this past season. But the Panthers did win the division nevertheless. But let's unpack this here, because if you were to tell a Titans fan, hey, in year four of Cam Ward, entering year four of Cam Ward, you're going to be having the same conversations that people in Carolina are having about Bryce Young, I don't think Titans fans want anything to do with that. Now, you heard Baumgartner say that the major difference between Young and Ward was that when the going got tough, Ward kept going, unlike in Carolina, where Bryce Young needed to take a breather for a little bit. The mental toughness was not there. But, Willie, when you hear that comparison, Bryce Young, Cam Ward, you look at the trajectory of Young's early career, you look at where Ward is after his first year, what do you make of Baumgartner's comparison there?
I'm intrigued. I think there are a lot of parallels. At the same time, I don't look at Bryce Young, because I was a little surprised that they thought stylistically there were some similarities, because I thought Bryce Young, the rap always was first overall pick and a guy at 5'11 that doesn't happen very often, right? Or whatever his height is. But I do think I can see Cam Ward having more ups and downs before he gets to the playoffs. And the bottom line is, if Cam Ward gets the Titans to the playoffs in year three, that's not all bad. I do think if you look at Young's numbers, he's gotten a lot better, but he still has a long way to go. So you tell me how you answer that, D-Mace.
I guess there would the comparison here, I think, and I'm sure we'll get into this even more in depth this week, but I think the comparisons, there are some. Stylistic, there are some. Probably not so much, because there was no, you know, when Bryce came out, his thing wasn't accuracy. Bryce was probably one of the most accurate passers in college football coming out. But there was some reservations on drafting him number one overall because of his height. So there were some question marks with both guys. But I think both guys got dropped into situations where it wasn't advantageous for either one of them, because it was two organizations that were sort of in the same space. Now, I think what they did with Bryce Young has, you know, made his job a little bit better, and hopefully that's what the Titans will do with, with Cam, and they have done, and hopefully it just materialized to something good during the season. But I think both of these guys have some of the same traits, and, I don't see comparing him to Bryce Young, I don't think that's too far out of the box, considering what I explained. Now, listen, the way they play the game is a little bit different. I think they both have some things that they do alike, but I think if you watch them stylistically, you would know that, okay, that's Cam and that's Bryce. But I think there are still some similarities. So I'm not up in arms that he compared him. I don't think it's a necessarily bad thing, because now we see what Bryce Young is capable of doing. Does he need to get better? Yes. But I don't think that's the worst thing to be compared to Bryce Young, considering what both guys sort of, landed themselves into.
I have a question for you, Adam, since you watch that division some, following the Saints the way you do. I'm wondering, because I honestly have not watched Carolina a whole lot. It looks to me like Young has gotten better, but the roster certainly has gotten better as well. So is he really doing way better because he's carrying them? I don't see that. I just think the roster has gotten better. They're 8-9. It's not a dominant team at all, but it's an improved team because they were way, way down at the bottom, and they had a lot of things going against them before, right? They traded a lot of assets just to get Bryce Young.
And I do think that trade put Young behind the eight ball,
yes,
so to speak, because that trade involved DJ Moore going from, what was it, Carolina to Chicago, mm-hmm, right? So there goes your number one wide receiver. If I recall correctly, Young's number one wide receiver his rookie year was Adam Thielen.
Yes.
And Adam Thielen,
yes,
not the
past
Adam Thielen
prime,
you remember,
yeah,
from Minnesota, an older Adam Thielen. But to Derek's been talking about this. The Panthers went out last year and drafted a number one wide receiver for Bryce Young and Ted McMillan, and McMillan had a solid season. Correct me if I'm wrong, offensive rookie of the year?
70 catches, yes, 14 and a half yards a catch, 1,014 yards, 7 touchdowns.
So, of course, there's a parallel.
Rookie of the year, yes.
There's a parallel with the Titans drafting Carnell Tate, number 4 overall. I think McMillan was 9th overall. Mm-hmm. Tate, 4th overall. So you're hoping that Ward and Tate can develop the chemistry that Young and McMillan have. But it is really interesting because Young was a more heralded prospect coming out of college than Cam Ward was. But and I do think the players are similar, as Nick Baumgartner brought up. I think both of them have that desire to just let it rip, throw the ball deep, try to get it into tight windows, make huge plays. But, of course, if you're a Titans fan, you're hoping that Ward's career gets off to a much smoother start than Young's. And I do think that that Ward's, and I know it's intangible, mm-hmm. Ward's mental toughness seems to be ahead of Young's. So the fact that Ward went through what Willie calls the gasoline fire last year, played every snap until he injured himself in the final game, you're hoping that perhaps Ward can avoid some of the traps that Young fell into on his way to where he is right now.
I also made this point last year, D-Mace. If you take Bryce Young's stats, take mm-hmm. the win-loss out of it, because the first year was so miserable.
2-14.
And Cam is
3-14.
Whatever, yeah. And, you know, he's going to get the loss for the last start. And he played, what, one series or whatever. That's kind of how that works. But take the other numbers. If Cam Ward progresses like Bryce Young, gets a little bit better. Of course, Young took a step back in the second year. But even if he has the numbers that Young had last year in year three, I think Titans fans will be dissatisfied. They're going to want more just because of the expectations that go from being the first pick in the draft.
Of course. I mean, listen, if you don't come out and, you know, being the number one pick overall, not being a first-round pick, but being the number one pick overall, you know, there's just this, you know, thought, oh, you should be, you know, much better, and your numbers should look like this in your second year. And, you know, part of it is right. You should be, you know, the biggest jump is from your first year to your second year. So we should see a different Cam Ward, not just necessarily in his stats, but how he goes about, you know, in you know, leading his team, and how does he look in certain situations. But if you look at, honestly, if you look at Bryce Young, he's gotten better every year.
He's gotten better, but he started so low.
Yes.
Like last year, he finished QBR 47.6, ranked 25th.
He's
better.
Yeah, he's taken
but
a
how
step
much
back. Because his first year, he was at 34, then he got to 50.
You're hoping that Cam Ward, when he is entering his fourth year in the NFL.
No, his third year.
This will be Young's
fourth
year. This will be Young's fourth year in the NFL. Yeah. You're hoping that when Cam Ward is entering his fourth year in the NFL, mm-hmm. he's significantly ahead of where Young is right now.
I would hope so.
If you're, again, if you are looking at wins in basic yardage, then yes. But if you look at, you know, just say for instance, his completion rate went up. His sack percentage went down. His success rate went up. So there are things within all these metrics that his numbers as far as how many yards he's thrown. Now, you got to understand, his first year, he threw almost 550 passes. The next following year, he only attempted 384. So what they said wasn't, and listen, he didn't play as many games, but.
Because he got benched.
Exactly. We're gonna slow this thing down for him and see how that worked. Well, his interception percentage, that ended up going up. But a lot of other things, if you're talking about his metrics, a lot of other things end up working in his favor. So does he have 3,000, you know, 4,000 yards passing? Does he have 20 or 30 touchdowns? No, he doesn't. But I think if you look in between the numbers, he has gotten better, which means their team is getting better and they're surrounding people with him. So when I look at Cam, when we talk about the small things, the margins, I want to see if he's getting better around the margins, which I think would inherently make him better as a quarterback.
I think I would put it this way. Take the numbers aside. Mm-hmm. When you're watching, I don't think Bryce Young has gotten to a point where they're winning because of Bryce
yes.
Young. You're hoping when you draft a quarterback first mm-hmm. that eventually, and he's you hope is going to make it happen here pretty soon if you're a Carolina fan.
He's had a couple of big games. I feel like he had like a 450-yard passing game at
was
some
it three
point.
Touchdowns
but he's not,
somewhere?
He's not carrying that team.
No.
Not week in and week out.
He had a 448-yard game during the season.
I would hope by the end of the third year that Cam Ward is going to have a few more of those games where you're saying, okay, he's starting to become the leader. He's starting to drive them. Right now, you know, he's trying to survive, right? And they've made some moves with the roster that you hope will help him. But I'm trying to look ahead by the end of the third year. I'm hoping that there's big progress, a big jump from year two to year three.
He needs to have
– bigger than where Young was last year.
He needs to have – and it doesn't necessarily need to stop right where I'm saying the game he needs to have. But he needs to have a Will Levis-type game. That game where Will Levis had three or four touchdowns and was just his debut game. He was just lights out. He needs one of those games, and he needs to build upon that game. It doesn't need to be like that every game, but we need to see that you can carry the team or you can make the plays when the plays need to be made.
615-737-1025. Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic joined us on the program last week, wrote a film study of Cam Ward, said that Cam Ward's rookie film reminds him in many ways of Bryce Young. Your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I saw a story listing the best and worst case scenarios for every NFL team in 2026. We'll see if we agree with what it says about the Titans coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. As they say, never trust a big butt in a smile.
It's a remix, man. I like it. So what's the theme, Cam?
Does Connor know the original song? Does he know where this is from? This sample?
I'm sure he knows the
bell bib the bow.
Nice.
Well done.
So what was the theme today?
So the theme today has been mashups. I don't know if you noticed.
Okay. I have.
Yes. Cha-cha slide with little Michael Jackson.
I started to dance to one, and I was like, oh, it's switching on me.
Yeah, okay. That was the goal.
I like it.
But Connor, just remember this as you get older. Never trust a big butt in a smile.
She's dangerous.
Yeah, it is.
Poison.
It is dangerous. Yeah. Willie knows what I'm talking about. Does he?
Bell Biv DeVoe?
Let's just leave it there.
I was about to say, huh? How would Willie know? That's what I was
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but.
Stop it.
Don't try to relate to me.
Willie isn't as clean cut as you think he is.
Hey, stop it. I don't want to. Hey, listen.
The leather jacket, the greased back hair for Willie Donick back in the day.
Rolled up pants.
Willie looking like Kanicki from Greece.
Kanicki.
A hickey from Kanicki is like a Hallmark card. That's the saying.
I do love that movie.
Willie Donick.
The best movie
Willie
in the world.
Donick would have been a greaser in the 1950s.
What? Yeah, I think so.
I do try to think. I was thinking about Animal House the other day, too. Kind of the same. The 60s.
You would definitely be an Animal House.
Not Danny Zuko. Willie Donick.
Am I more Delta House or the Omega, whatever, the Marmalade, Anita Ryder, the straight lace?
You're an Omega guy.
I'm not going there.
You're not an Omega guy?
I can hang with the Deltas.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. All right, before I get myself in trouble, CBSSports.com had a story looking at the best and worst case scenarios for every NFL team. And here are the entries for best case and worst case scenario for the Tennessee Titans in 2026. Quote, the new leadership in Nashville works. Robert Saleh's second stint as a head coach proves far more successful than his first with the Jets. Cam Ward thrives with Brian Daboll as his offensive coordinator, especially with first-round wideout Carnell Tate exploding out of the gate. Ward enjoys a strong year two leap after flashing that potential during the second half of last season. With better coaching, Ward's emergence, and a defense improved by key offseason additions like Jermaine Johnson and Alante Taylor, Tennessee becomes a wild card team in the AFC playoff picture. Best case scenario. Worst case scenario. Ward doesn't take the leap everyone is hoping for in year two. and the coaching staff doesn't seem up to the task. Saleh confirms that he is a great defensive coordinator, but doesn't have what it takes to lead an entire franchise. And the Titans finish last in the AFC South for the fourth season in a row.
Well, if the latter happens, then, I mean, goodness gracious, it's not going to look good around here.
Now, that best case scenario, a wild card team in the AFC playoff picture. We see so many worst to first turnarounds in the NFL. This would not be one of them because the Titans would be a wild card team in this scenario. They would not be winning the AFC South. But is that rosy for a best case scenario, being a playoff team this coming season?
I think it is, considering where they've been.
I think it was Mike Herndon told us last week. I want the Titans to be in the hunt graphic in like week 15. Like, will they probably make the playoffs? No, they would need a lot to break their way. But when they show the standings on the screen, it says in the hunt, Tennessee, 6-9 or whatever it is. That would be a best case scenario for me.
But there are times where an in the hunt, and yes, they put the record like, are they really in the hunt? Are they really in the hunt?
They have not been eliminated from playoff contention.
But they only got 4 or 5 wins, and it's like, okay, are they
but
really?
You know what? As a Titans fan, you will absolutely take that based on everything you've watched for the past few years.
Okay, answer this, and our listeners can answer this too, because I think I felt a little bit different about this team last year, even though I did pick them to win 7 games, something like that, 8 games. But I think the enthusiasm for this team is a little bit different than what it was last year. And I think a lot of it has to do with Saleh. And
better
Debo.
Or worse?
I think it's better.
Yeah.
I think because even when Callahan took the job, the question was, he's never been a play caller. He's never did this. He's never did that. He's, you know, first year. Well, you don't have those with Saleh, nor do you have it with Debo. Both of those guys shown that they can be successful, at least in part of their role. Now, Debo showed it a little bit more than Saleh because Debo was able to lead his team to a playoff. But there's not as many questions coming in or coming out of the hire than we had last year at this time with Callahan. So I think just from that, that's a plus. So I'm wondering, like, is Titan fans' enthusiasm, not to say that they're going to go out here and make the playoffs or win 12, 13 games, no, but compared to what it was last year, seeing the guys that they've drafted, the free agents that they brought in, are you a little bit more
optimistic
about this season compared to last year?
Well, I think Titans fans would wholeheartedly say they are more optimistic about this season than last season because of a lot of the things you mentioned. There's always excitement about a new coach. Mm-hmm. And although Robert Saleh is not an offensive guru, he has called plays as a defensive coordinator, and he will be calling the defensive plays for the Titans. You bring in an experienced offensive coach in Brian Daboll versus the inexperienced coaches that the Titans had last year. You're hoping that Cam Ward's second half was a sign of things to come. They drafted Cardale Tate, who's making one-handed grabs in practice.
Slow motion.
In slow motion. That's the key part, in slow motion.
Exactly.
You know, Jeffrey Simmons just signed a monster deal, and he had the season of his life, and you're hoping he builds off of that. So there is reason to feel a lot more optimistic. But how much, like, there's one thing to feel optimistic. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to be, okay, I'm optimistic, but I still think this team ceiling is 6 wins.
I think that's very fair. Maybe 7, but 6 would double the win. So you're moving in the right direction. One thing that jumped out to me, and you've mentioned him a couple times, is Carnell Tate. The best case, he explodes out of the gate or wherever they said there. I would be blown away if that happens. I would be so excited because I just feel like that's a high expectation that I'm not sure is realistic with the running game they have. They're still going to be sorting out the offensive line. It's a new offense. It's not like Carnell Tate has great players around the field to support him. I think it's going to take a little time. I'm more intrigued. I want to see what it looks like in the second half of the season. The exploding out of the gate, I'm not counting on that. I thought that was a little bit strange. But we are talking, quote, best case scenario.
Yeah, when it comes to Carnell Tate, it to me is not about, at least not the first year, it's not about the numbers to me. Now, he needs to be productive when you look at the numbers, because that sometimes can justify some things. But what is he doing on third down? Is he making those key clutch catches? That's what A.J. was doing his rookie year. A.J. didn't have a bunch of catches, but he made the key ones, and he advanced the ball on third down, and he broke tackles, and he did things like that. So it wasn't like they were targeting him 150 times, but he made do with the targets that he had. And that's what I want from Carnell Tate. Is if he gets over 1,000 yards, great. That's perfect. But if he doesn't, I want to see where his impact was in each game, because you can catch a lot of footballs and not have an impact. You know, I want to see what his impact in the game. That's why, to me, it's not necessarily about everything isn't about the numbers when it comes to Carnell Tate's rookie year. I think what is his impact going to be on those crucial plays or those crucial minutes in the games when they're going to need their fourth overall pick, well, fifth overall pick, to bail him out. Is he going to be able to do that?
CBS Sports, by the way, also said the Titans had the fifth best offseason of any team in the NFL. The only teams apparently who had better off seasons: the LA Rams at 4, the Jets at 3, the Raiders at 2, and the Browns at 1.
Was that pre Miles Garrett?
No, or? This just happened.
Oh wow, okay.
So is there a bell cow move that is a defining move that makes them fifth?
Let's see here. Let's see what they wrote about the Titans. Here's part of it. I won't read the whole thing. Tennessee entered the offseason with a treasure chest of financial resources as well as an entrenched starting quarterback. Robert Saleh was a candidate deserving of a second chance to be an NFL head coach, but the coaching staff's decision to bring in several players with which they are familiar, Jermaine Johnson, Wandale Robinson, and Daniel Bellinger, may ultimately determine whether or not this regime is successful. If it does not work out, prognosticators will point back to this offseason as an indication they had not learned lessons from prior shortcomings. It also mentioned signing John Franklin Myers, bringing in Solomon Thomas, Alante Taylor, Cordell Flott, Carnell Tate, so on and so forth.
But that's exactly, I mean, you know, I hate to bring up the name, but that's exactly what New England did. You know, they went out and, you know, got some key veterans that were, you know, either here or you know, had some type
of Vrabel's guys.
Some connection to Vrabel. And they had their quarterback, and they built on that. And it worked for them. So the Titans going out and get Myers and Flott and those guys that have either played in a solid system or have been productive throughout the NFL, they're not necessarily – old guys, but there are guys that are still going to give you two or three really good years. That can help a team like the Titans, because it can do exactly what you know, their transactions and free agencies can do exactly what it did for New England. And I'm not saying it may not get them to the Super Bowl, but it could get them the sort of, you know, worst to second sort of deal where it puts them in a playoff, and then after that you kind of let chips fall where they may. But I just look at the Titans team as this team had a lot to work out of, I mean a lot to sort of dig themselves out of. I think they've done a good job at that with the free agents they acquire and the draft picks. Now the only way it's going to work is if those free agents that they brought in continue to play the way they had been playing prior to getting here.
By the way, a lot of people on our text line like the word abreast. Perhaps abreast should have been the word of the day.
I mean, I'm a little disappointed. You have not really used the word of the day since the beginning of the show when you introduced it.
You know what? That is a fair point. I will try
to. If it's going
to
be the word of the day, we got to figure out how to get it in there.
I will try to sneak in the actual word of the day in the final segment. What I'm also learning about our listeners is not only do they want to be knowledgeable and learn more words, A lot of them are juvenile because they just like the word oppressed.
In the way that Beavis and Butthead would make jokes about certain words. Yeah.
You said breast.
One thing I never thought I would ever hear on this show, Derek Mason imitating Beavis and or Butthead.
That was the greatest moment of my life.
I used to watch it back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Those guys went away for a while, but the SNL skit with
Ryan Gosling.
Oh, my gosh. That was
they're back now. I think they did a reboot of the show.
Reboots are never good. I watched, speaking of Beavis and Butthead and Mike Judge, I watched the reboot of King of the Hill. I think it was last year.
No go.
Some things are better left the way they were.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't need to do the reboot.
Not everything needs to be rebooted. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show coming up next. I'll also try to squeeze in the word of the day. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. A Nirvana Michael Jackson mashup to end the show from Connor New. How about that?
I like that. That's innovative.
This is a true mashup here.
Yes.
I had to do some research for this one.
Is that cutting edge, Willie?
That would be cutting edge, okay.
You're growing up, young man.
Well done, Mr. Newt.
All right.
I think I've proven myself today.
There you go.
I know Belle Biv DeVoe, I know Beavis and Butthead, and I know Nirvana.
There you go.
I think I've proven myself.
You're getting there.
He's a savant.
You're getting there. On tomorrow's program, Willie will take his first ever bite of an Uncrustable. As we discussed, I am going to bring my wife and I, we just bought this gigantic freezer that we have in our attic now, just because we have so much stuff in the freezer and not enough room in the actual freezer, and there are a ton of Uncrustables in there. So you
stock up.
Yes.
So when you say attic, do you mean upstairs?
Yes.
Why did y'all put it upstairs?
Well, we didn't have room for it anywhere else.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like.
No, I was just thinking, like, that's the first time I heard. Nothing wrong with it.
Do people have basements in Tennessee? Are basements a thing in Tennessee?
I have one.
Okay.
They're not as common as they are up north, where, you know, northeast, you north.
Where I grew up.
Where I grew up,
there were no basements. It was mostly attics.
You didn't have basements?
I did not have a basement.
Oh, yeah, we had basements.
But I will bring you one, and we will have you eat it live on air. That's the best content. The best content. It's an Uncrustable because there are no crusts. It's not a Crustable. Mm-hmm. It's an Uncrustable because a Crustable would just be a regular peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah, you're right.
I guess you could say that's cutting edge.
Yeah, ah.
Very much so.
Ah,
unintended.
I see what you did there. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com will join the program tomorrow as well. He was supposed to join us today, but he was at the NHL's Board of Governors meetings, and that ran long. So we were happy to reschedule Greg for tomorrow. He'll join us near the top of the program. Coming up, I don't know if it starts right at 6 o'clock, maybe 7 o'clock, the first round of the NBA draft. And I am curious where some of the quote-unquote local players will go. Nate Ament, star freshman for the Tennessee Vols, is projected to go 9th overall to Dusty May in the Dallas Mavericks. Get used to saying that. Jacoby Gillespie, point guard from Tennessee, projected to go 41st in the second round to Miami, joining Giannis Antetokounmpo. Right after Gillespie in this mock draft, Felix Okpara, also from Tennessee, projected to go 42nd overall to the San Antonio Spurs. And then later in the second round, 55th overall, Tyler Nickel, projected to go to the world champion New York Knicks.
Wow, wouldn't that be something?
Willie, what do you make of Tyler Nickel's pro prospects?
Well, I think we know that Tyler Nickel could be perfect for the put the guy in the corner on a team that's got a lot of guys who can make plays, Brunson, whatever. Let's just take the Knicks. I mean, he's got a lightning quick release. You know, he's not going to be the focal point of an offense, but he's going to make the threes. The question for him would be, can he defend well enough, rebound well enough? Because he doesn't have to do a whole lot else on offense, right? He's going to be a guy that is a dead-eye shooter.
He's going to be a three-point.
Can he do enough? I think You never know. Like there are guys that play in the league for a long time. I'll give you one who's way different type of player than Nickel. But Tobias Harris, he played at Tennessee what seems like eons ago. He's played in the league for a long, long time. He was a great college player. But I wasn't thinking Tobias Harris is going to play in the league for, I don't know how many years he's been in the league now. It's got to be 10 or 12. He played for Bruce Pearl.
Yeah.
At Tennessee.
It's a long time ago.
That's been a long time.
You know, the person I'm interested in is Opar.
Yeah.
Because I think he a scorer? He's not a scorer. Can he get you some putbacks and dunks? Yeah. But I want to see how he adapts defensively, because he was a heck of a defensive player, you know, in college. Will that translate for him? Because I think that's going to be his niche to start, is, you know, a guy that plays excellent defense, can give you some buckets, more so on a wing and a fast break and some putbacks, but a guy that it's a high-level defensive guy. So I'm interested to see if he may even go a little bit higher than what they got him projected.
Now, if this mock draft from ESPN is correct, and Tyler Nickel is drafted by the New York Knicks, and the New York Knicks repeat as NBA champions, will Tyler Nickel be stopped by NYPD during the parade, like Tyler Kolek was last week? Is Tyler Nickel recognizable enough to not be stopped by
especially
the New York Police
rookie.
Department?
As a rookie, especially.
Yes.
Depends on what he's doing as a rookie.
AJ DeBanza of BYU is expected to be the number one overall pick to the Washington Wizards. I would also like to congratulate all of the Memphis Grizzlies fans listening on drafting Cameron Boozer, because that's what's probably going to happen. But the interesting one, of course, is in between DeBanza and Boozer, and that's Darren Peterson. Darren Peterson is expected to go second overall to the Utah Jazz. Remember, he had serious cramping issues at Kansas.
Right.
And I think there were some questions about his commitment level. Remember, I think there were a couple of times where he seemed to check himself out of games.
Right.
But
to the point where his coach was baffled
Bill Self,
about it.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Self himself was indeed baffled by it. So apparently it won't be an issue because he's expected to go top two in the draft. But I wonder if it's a risk. How big of a risk is it?
I mean, if they're taking him, if someone's going to draft him that high, I don't think they, you know, how we looked at it, they're not looking at it that way, or how some looked at it, they're not looking at it that way. If indeed he goes anywhere in the top five or top ten, to me, he reminds me of Kawhi Leonard. He has a complete game, offense, defense, mid-range, three-pointer. He can get to the basket. He can create on his own. So, and that's really the only knock on him, you know, is, you know, how is he going to adapt from a, you know, you can't just take yourself out of the game standpoint, or you can't just sit down because, you know, you're tired. I mean, sit out games because you're tired. How does he adapt to the pro game? But I think he's going to be a hell of a player, barring injuries. But it's those other things that I think, you know, some people are worried about. But if you're drafting him second overall, I don't think that's your concern.
Here's my question for the two of you. Which SEC player who is expected to be drafted tonight will have the best pro career, and why is it Darius Akoff?
I was going to say Darius Akoff.
I'm impressed with Akoff. You know, the other guy is where is Brazil? Is he going to be drafted?
Let's take a look.
That's another guy. I'm still
having
nightmares.
He is expected to be drafted in the second round.
Okay.
You forgot about known three-game participant of the Kentucky Wildcats season, Jaden Quaintance.
Well, excuse me. I apologize.
I forgot about two.
To Connor and all of the other Wildcats fans out there. I mean, who are some of the other choices?
Well, Acuff is at the headline. I mean, I'm still having nightmares from the SEC tournament.
Ament.
Yeah. Sure.
Yes. Who else off the top of my head? I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head. Oh, LeBaron Filon from Alabama. No, it's going to be Akoff. He's going to have the best pro career.
Nobody that you've said hits where I believe Akoff will go.
Ortega
I love Akoff, But you got to give, I mean, amen. You just hadn't, he was injured.
And he's so young.
Yeah, and he's so young. So he may have the highest upside.
But Acuff has that I can take over a game.
Yes, he does.
All by myself attitude. And he did it many times.
And I do think, you know, the DAWG, I think he's got that. I think he is ferocious, Acuff.
Yeah.
And Amen. I want to see a little bit more of that. I do think he will grow into that more. I think he's a competitor, but just that hard-nosed toughness, I want to see a little bit more. I think Acuff's got him beat on that.
Yeah, I would
agree
with
that. Right now at their stage.
I would agree with that. I do love the NBA draft for this reason. As someone who watches college basketball all season long, I actually know these players. Of course, I'm going to watch the NHL draft on Friday and listen to our coverage, anchored by Willie Donick and Max Herz and others. But I haven't seen any of those kids play. I know nothing about them. And along similar lines with the NFL draft, because I don't watch college football the way I watch college basketball. So I know the top players in college football. But, like, what I love about the NBA draft is I can watch the second round and be like, yeah, I know that guy. So the NBA draft is my favorite draft to actually sit down and watch. So
one, it goes by pretty quick.
It does go by pretty quickly. The other thing, too, is I sent this to the group earlier. I believe Kentucky has the all-time record for most first-round picks with 60, Duke at 59. That's changing tonight.
It's at least tying.
Yes, I think there will be two Duke players drafted in the first round tonight.
I think there will be one Kentucky player,
yes,
so to speak. So we'll be tied.
Cameron Boozer will be drafted probably third overall. Isaiah Evans will probably be in the early to mid-20s somewhere. So it's always a fun night. It's always fun to watch players realize their dreams, no matter the league, NBA, NHL, so on and so forth. Quickly, before we get out of here, one texter says, hey, I just heard a great dad joke. What did Spartacus say after a lion ate his annoying wife? Nothing. He was gladiator.
I like that one.
And that is a fitting way to end the program.
That's a walk-off.
That is.
If you've ever wondered,
not bad.
If you've ever wondered what it would be like to hear Willie Donick eat an Uncrustable, you need to be tuned in tomorrow at 3 o'clock because he is going to take his first ever bite. But we actually do have other things to talk about tomorrow. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN will join the program as we talk about this nutso NHL offseason and look ahead to the NHL draft. We'll see what else we get into tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Have a wonderful rest of your evening. We'll talk to you then.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe and blessed, wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. We will be back on these airwaves starting at 3 p.m. tomorrow on 102.5. And as I always say, we're going to be talking and you're going to be listening. Peace.
You're going to be listening. Sorry.
Late, too late.